The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod, Elon Musk suing OpenAI.
I'm of the view that this case is all about discovery.
There's no money. They're not asking for money.
It's a company he helped found, and now the world's richest man says one-time protege Sam Altman has lost sight of the mission.
Is it really that he's disturbed that it's going to be a for-profit enterprise, or is it because he'd rather have more to do with the for-profit?
The explosive filing, and what does it all mean? Coming up on the podcast.
What advantage does he get out of that, other than maybe nuking a competitor?
And the U.S. facing a migrant crisis. More than 160,000 have arrived in our largest city in just the last 2 years. New York's Mayor Eric Adams.
The most important thing I believe we could do during this crisis is allow people to work.
Plus, Apple's virtual reality headset. Is the bloom off the rose? The WSJ's Joanna Stern looking at a 30-day return policy.
I really enjoyed using the Vision Pro at first, and I still enjoy using it. I am just reaching for it far less.
It's Friday, March 1st. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1. Cue, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Perhaps the story of the morning just hit. Elon Musk filing suit against OpenAI and CEO Sam Altman, alleging they have breached the company's founding agreement by putting profit ahead of benefiting humanity. Musk saying OpenAI's close relationship with Microsoft has undermined its original mission. Musk helped fund OpenAI in its early days. He has been outspoken about the dangers of AI and has been outspoken about his frustration with OpenAI and its governance, with Sam Altman, and with so much that has happened. He discussed this with me back in November. He's been quite public about it. Taking it, filing a suit is a whole other situation. Of course, yesterday we learned the SEC was investigating OpenAI. I think that was a relatively perfunctory investigation or inquiry. This to me is a completely different animal insofar as Elon Musk is one of the most well-heeled people. He can bring a lawsuit for a very long time. He can go up against an OpenAI and a Microsoft, and you can get into discovery.
I'm actually surprised he didn't do this sooner, because
I think it gets very, very interesting very, very quickly.
I just want to know, I mean, those are noble words, why he's doing, but he's no, he's very good at making profits. Maybe they're subsidized, but he's a very wealthy guy who's done very well in the capitalist system. I'm wondering, is it really that he's disturbed that it's going to be a for-profit enterprise, or is it because he'd rather have more to do with the for-profit?
Didn't he put in like $1 billion or something?
So he wants it to be. I know he wants it to be open. I know he wants it to be open, but does he really want it not to be a big moneymaker?
I will say.
You think he's altruistic?
I think in this
for you to say that.
In this particular case, I feel
that's
very comfortable
amazing.
Saying that this is not because he wants Grok or X some other version of his AI to beat out OpenAI.
And
by the way, there'll be that
when nobody
view
else
of it.
Was.
There'll be that view of it.
Yeah. Right.
But I do think that this comes from a place of genuine frustration. You know, look, I interviewed both of these guys, Sam and Elon, together when they first were beginning OpenAI.
Yeah.
Their whole effort, it was a completely different sort of frame of mind around what this was supposed to be. And I think that this is, people say, is Elon hurt or feels upset? This is one of those things that I actually think he hurts about.
Well, there is, in my view, I don't know if it's in your view, there's a precedent for him that he has shown he doesn't always do things to make a profit. And maybe people thought
this is one of them.
I'm talking about Twitter. Maybe people thought he was going to do it with Twitter. Maybe people thought that was a business investment. But many of us think that he was saving the whole notion of presenting both sides in a in a public forum and say free speech and lost his ass. I mean, how much money has he lost? I don't think he cares. So I will say if he did it then, maybe he's doing it now.
Look, originally, I should.
But I don't think you granted him that with the Twitter thing, did you?
To $1 billion. But then he backed off, and I think he only ended up putting in about $50 million. I think that's the case.
Do you think he did it with Twitter? Do you think that was altruistic?
Let me make two distinctions.
Okay.
Okay.
For me?
For you, with you.
Can you bring me along slowly?
No, okay, I'm just going to suggest that when he bought Twitter, he bought it with his money, and he bought it with investors' money.
Right.
And he went to those investors, and he told them that this was a business.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
You need to give me money because we're valuing
it. So you can't bring other people into his altruistic things.
I'm just suggesting to you, if that's altruistic, tell Mark Andreessen and all the people that have lost their money and call me. Okay. That I think just prima facie explains.
Yes, excellent point.
That it wasn't his
on OpenAI and this lawsuit. This is his suit. And in many ways, I could even put this in a comparable sort of category as to what Peter Thiel did with Gawker, if you remember, which was he had a great frustration.
Right.
No, and it goes to the idea of somebody who's really upset on a sort of personal level about something and is going to take it all the way to the very, very end.
In the case of Gawker, it got shut down.
It did get shut down. I don't know what the ultimate ramification of this is. But this is one of the last individuals in the world who could probably take on OpenAI and Microsoft, because, by the way, Microsoft will ultimately have a big stake in the outcome of this as well. And he's probably the only person who can actually do it.
So we'll see what happens. That was another great benefit to society in Peter Thiel's case, shutting down that piece of crap, right? That was good for mankind.
There are many people who would argue that. Other people who would argue the entertainment factor is gone.
Back in November, I spoke to Elon Musk at the DealBook conference about OpenAI and whether the startup should be a for-profit corporation. Listen to what he had to say.
OpenAI was actually started, and it was meant to be open source. I named it OpenAI after open source. It is, in fact, closed source. It should be renamed Super Closed Source for Maximum Profit AI. So, because this is what it actually is. It's gone from an open source foundation, a 501c3, to suddenly it's like a $90 billion for-profit corporation with closed source. So I don't know how you go from here to there, but that seems like is this legal?
As we were discussing, there is sort of a, remember when Peter Thiel went after Gawker, this is like a personal issue for him. And it's personal, there's animus, and I think it could get pretty serious. We're also going to be awaiting, and I think we'll hear about it in the next month or two, all of the governance issues that happened, if you remember, last fall. We'll understand a little bit more about that. I'm sure that Elon Musk thinks whatever we're going to hear is going to be completely whitewashed, and one of the reasons he's bringing the suit is because he can actually then capture discovery and all of that. So we'll see what happens, but I remember interviewing both of these gentlemen together years ago when they were fast friends, and this was something that they deeply had a passion about.
For people who don't understand, Elon Musk co-founded it with him, put in a big chunk of his own money.
It was his money, yeah.
At the time, he pledged $1 billion. I think it fell far short of that.
So, I
was just looking, and I don't know if this is correct, but it's been sourced at around $50 million that he actually put
in. I only believe it was about $50 million, which also maybe gets at the potential damages. I don't know in terms of what potentially we talked about what the outcome could be. Could a judge say, well, look, the damage is $50 million. You want your money back? You can get your money back. Right. But I imagine as part of this for Elon Musk, it's not even about the $50 million. It's much more about, can he change the outcome of this? Joining us right now is CNBC technology correspondent Steve Kovac. We've been going through the lawsuit.
Wild.
It is wild to see. It also is wild because we were talking about what the outcome of this case could be. It's unique in that Elon Musk is one of the few people who actually has standing in some ways to bring a case like this.
Right.
But then you have to think about what the quote-unquote damages are, if you will, if you're a judge. He is seeking to open up AI or open up OpenAI so that it is effectively truly an open source situation.
And to stop Microsoft from using it.
And to stop Microsoft from using it. The question is whether a judge could would stop that, or a judge would say, we'll give you back your $50 million initially because those are the damages to right. you personally. But it also means that we could get real discovery in the case about all of the things that have transpired.
Including the
how,
board. Yeah.
And how OpenAI has operated over
and
these several years.
And what Microsoft knows. That's part right. of what they're pushing for, too.
Right.
He says that only in the lawsuit that only OpenAI knows what's in this ChatGPT-4. And they suspect Microsoft does too.
And this is a thing that we've been talking about in AI, open source versus closed source. You have that European company, Mistral, right. who also just raised money from Microsoft, by right. the way. They're open source. Facebook is open right. source. You have Google and OpenAI as closed source. You can't tell. One thing that really stuck out to me is part of the case against OpenAI here, the argument that Musk is laying out is they've achieved what's called artificial general intelligence. AGI is what the acronym is for. They're alleging ChatGPT-4 has already achieved that. If you talk to OpenAI right now, if you talk to the folks at Microsoft right now, they say, no way, we're nowhere close to AGI. So this whole part of this case, or a good chunk of this case,
you think rests on that?
That's what it sounds like. It says, we believe, or something right. to that effect, like just based on our outside view, they've already achieved this milestone of artificial general intelligence, thereby negating the deal between Microsoft and OpenAI, because their deal says once OpenAI achieves right. AGI,
okay,
they
so
can't
I
use it.
I read the case differently. I read that, yeah. as, but I don't believe that the whole case rests on that.
It doesn't rest, but that's a
huge argument. If the case rests
argument.
On that, there's actually a problem.
Right.
I think that is a component part.
But it's the nonprofit stuff.
Of the case. I think that the other issues are, because otherwise, if you were a judge, you could rule against this case in about 10 seconds
right.
and say there's no AGI.
Yeah.
But if you looked at how they did it, they separated the issues so that that is sort of a one of
it's the contract,
half a dozen
right?
arguments.
I mean, it's breach of contract.
And the contract is the founding agreement.
Correct.
That Musk,
they post in there. Yeah.
That Musk and Altman sat down and agreed to. And I guess the sanctity of that contract is going to be what this whole thing is.
Exactly.
Determined.
And they have to prove. And we know how the structure got changed. OpenAI, they would tell you the way we have it structured today, we're still a nonprofit. We just have this other division here that they call capped profit. What right. that really means, we've never quite understood. So that seems to be the division they're going after and saying this is effectively right. becoming the R&D version or situation right. for Microsoft.
The bigger question I have is whether, if you're OpenAI and Microsoft, you actually want to settle this case. Because the truth is, and to me this goes to the, I'm of the view that this case is all about discovery.
Yeah.
This case has almost nothing to do with anything else except
there's no money. They're not asking
right.
for money.
And therefore, if you don't want to participate in the discovery process,
just write a check.
The question is, what kind of check could you write? And is there a check that you could write?
I don't.
Or does the richest guy in the world want a check?
No, I don't think I don't think he does. Yeah. And so then the question is sort of, how does this really play out?
And then, well, then let's zoom back a little bit from what's happening in the case. Let's talk about what's happening in Musk's X world, right? He's trying to create XAI, which is a competitor to right. OpenAI. They have a chatbot called Grok. It's supposed to be unwoke or something. Fine, it hasn't taken off. He's trying to raise money. He has right. unsuccessfully been right. able
so
to raise
you're
money.
In you the, look you're at in the camp of maybe of
sour
Joe,
grapes.
That you think this is a, not just sour grapes, you think that this is a cynical play to compete
yes.
in a better way.
That was my initial read.
Okay.
Here I am, Elon Musk, the richest guy in the world, right. the hottest startup in the world
is
OpenAI, and I own Twitter.
I'm going to take the other side of that bet, which is I think that he fundamentally, at a visceral and personal level,
yeah.
Feels philosophically frustrated with what happened in a way that, by the way, maybe right, maybe wrong. Meaning you could. Maybe he shouldn't feel the way he does, but I don't disbelieve that he feels the way he does.
I'm sure feelings are great. Do feelings work in a case like this or in court? Maybe he can say
I'm
mad.
In this case, they might, actually.
Right. And what does he? What could he possibly get out of in this discovery? What is he going to? What advantage does he get out of that, other than maybe nuking a competitor so his platform can get better?
Well, that's the issue that where I'm going with
that.
I'm not sure it's about nuking the competitor. As a competitor, I think it's about nuking the company that he feels on a very personal basis that he effectively created. This is
sure.
like, this is like.
Well, he's been taking credit since it became really popular. He's been taking credit for it.
And you're saying that you don't think he should have taken credit?
No, he should. No, he was part
but
of the
you
founding.
Say it in such, you say it in such a very unique way. The reason
yeah.
I'm making the point,
right.
it's literally, I try to put myself in other people's shoes to sort of meet them where they are,
sure.
right? He's somebody who looks at this and says, this is my baby.
Right.
Right? I helped birth this baby.
But he left, too.
Well, he left under very unique circumstances. Yeah. And by the way, against the narrative or against him, you could argue that one of the reasons he left was because there's an argument there was a period of time where he was even trying to turn OpenAI himself into a commercial entity. Remember, that's going to become a separate argument about this. But I do think that it's a very personal issue rather than a competitive one. I'm sure other people will have
It also feels sour. That too feels sour grapes-ish, right?
I mean, it doesn't really matter. He contributed, according to this complaint, he contributed $44 million to OpenAI between 2016
that's not
and September
nothing.
Of 2020. It's not nothing.
No, that's real
and
money.
And the question comes down to, does the founding agreement stand or not?
Yeah.
And if they violated the founding agreement, I mean, I think that's where the judge
would have
to go.
It puts Microsoft in a really tough position.
It does.
If this gets unwound, because Microsoft is so heavily dependent. I don't know if we have Microsoft shares on here.
And by the way, it may not be that it gets unwound. Maybe that nothing really happens, but it becomes one of the great distractions for OpenAI, for all of the clients who are thinking, do I want to be part of this or that? Do I want to go?
It's good for Google.
By the way, it may be good for Google. It may be good for a whole number of other AI companies. Yeah. It could be good for even some of the stuff that Amazon's doing.
Yeah, exactly. Or Anthropic. I mean, this is a time for them. But
so maybe there's a partnership they work out.
Could be.
Steve, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Nice to see you.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, New York City Mayor Eric Adams, the migrant crisis in his town, regulating social media, and the plant smelled around the Big Apple. What he can do and what he wants to do about marijuana in New York.
We're seeing far too many illegal shops opening because the police department, the sheriff, do not have the local authority to immediately close down these locations.
We'll be right back.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nexco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod.
Up and Andrew, Q.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live at the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan. President Biden and former President Trump separately visiting and speaking from the U.S.-Mexico border. That happened yesterday.
They desperately need more resources, need more agents, more officers, more judges, more equipment in order to secure our border.
Biden talked up a border security bill that's been shunned by many in the House GOP conference. Trump blaming, though, Biden for the broken state of things.
The United States is being overrun by the Biden migrant crime. It's a new form of vicious violation to our country.
Tens of thousands of migrants that have made their way into this country have come to New York, putting a strain on some of the city services. Joining us to talk about that and so much more, New York City Mayor Eric Adams. Mayor, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. It's
good
great
morning.
To see you. Let's talk about the migrant crisis. And let me just ask you frankly, who do you blame for what's happening here?
Well, I think that the goal is not so much pointed to blame, and this blame can go around in so many different sectors, is how do we solve the problem? 177,000 migrants and asylum seekers have found their way to New York City, and I think there's a clear way of that we can solve this problem. Number one, we need a real decompression strategy to allow this to go throughout the entire country. And number two, we need to allow people to work. What is more of the American dream than the right to work? You cannot prevent that if we want people to take the next step in their journey.
But tell us about the battle that's been happening between the city of New York, the state of New York, and Washington. You all, plus CEOs in this city, have called for federal funding from the White House, and that call has not been returned.
Well, actually, when you look at it, a real coalition has developed. You look at what's taking place in Chicago, Denver, Houston, Washington, D.C., and other local municipalities, El Paso, Texas. No city should have to carry the load of the migrant and asylum seeker crisis. It's a national problem. The long term is having a real immigration reform that's taking place, but immediately we need to have the proper funding because right. It is impacting all of our cities at this time economically.
There's a historical issue here, though, to talk about, which is the sanctuary city status that New York has or has had, something that you are now trying to change. Can you speak to that?
Well, we believe in the sanctuary city status of immigrants that are here should be allowed to continue to move forward in their lives. We're talking about a specific part of it that was changed under the previous administration. From the days of Mayor Koch and Mayor Bloomberg, there was a clear indicator for those who commit serious crimes in the city. They should be able to be deported after they serve their time. And I continue to believe that as a former police officer. We have a job of to apprehend those who commit crimes. The prosecutors prosecute, and I think the federal government should use this authority after the time is served to deport the individual. Dangerous people, no matter if they're migrants and asylum seekers or long-term New Yorkers, should not be carrying out violent acts on New Yorkers. And the overwhelming number of migrants and asylum seekers here are trying to take that next step, but there is a small number that are violent and they're dangerous.
You spoke earlier about the idea of having these migrants work in New York and giving them an opportunity to work. Have you ever thought of just doing it on your own at this point?
We would love to. Trust me, I've turned over every legal stone to see how we could go about doing it. But if we do it, we could expose ourselves to violating federal laws as well as the city being sanctioned. And would you believe I cannot even allow migrants to volunteer and give them a stipend? If I wanted them just to clean up and the areas where they are staying, that's not allowed to do. When you think about this, this strikes at the heart of who we are as a country. All of our immigrants that have come to this city, all of us in this country, we had the authorization to work and earn our rights to be here. And that's all the migrants and asylum seekers are asking for.
But one of the things you are doing is an experimental program to provide debit cards with cash on the card. This has created enormous controversy in the city among some taxpayers who say, why are we paying and giving out this money to these migrants? And isn't this only going to encourage more migrants to come to New York?
And the reason it's creating such controversy is because how it has been reported and distorted. Here's what we're doing. We are required to feed migrants and asylum seekers, as well as everyone else in our homeless system. About 40,000 are in the homeless system that are not migrant and asylum seekers. We're required to feed them. And so what I told the team to do is we have to find a way to do it that's less costly, because we want a 30% decrease in the cost of the migrant crisis, and that we don't have food waste. We were able to do that. We're saving approximately $600,000 a month, $7.2 million a year by giving individuals a card that allows them to buy food or baby supplies, spending $13 a day on food. That's cheaper. That's less food waste. This is a real win-win for us. And the money will go into the local economy, because now we're going to the local stores, supermarkets, where we're going to hire local. This is a smart way to bring down the cost and replace the money back into our city.
Mayor, a very direct and political question. When you look at President Biden, you look at former President Trump, and you look at the migrant crisis that you are facing.
Well, I think
which one do you believe will ultimately help you solve that crisis faster?
I'm a supporter of the president, and I think when you do an analysis of this issue of immigration, this is an issue that has been played out too long on the political stage of our country. It has to be resolved. It's one of the top issues that voters are looking at. I think that we could solve it now by taking some very clear steps, such as the decompression strategy, funding these cities, allowing migrants and asylum seekers to work. We did almost 25,000 with work authorization and TPS. When it was recently expanded, we can go even further to some of the other cities and municipalities.
Mr. Mayor, I've seen you can imagine it's been dredged up from 2019, and it was President Biden basically saying, it sounded like something from the Statue of Liberty, bring us your tired message. This is why we're here. If you want to come here for a better life, come here. We want you to come. Then he rescinded, 90 executive orders at that time. I mean, it's clear where the 7.2 million, I think we can at least ascribe some cause and effect to those comments and getting rid of all the executive orders. Do you think the president could reinstitute, put some of those executive orders with the sign of a pen back on? And would that help? Would you urge him to do that to help your situation?
The most important thing I believe we could do during this crisis is allow people to work. Everyone who passed through the Statue of Liberty came here, and even if it was a menial job, it gave them the dignity and respect that everyone that here deserves. Think about it for a moment. Do you know we don't even hear about the Ukrainian citizens that arrived here? We have a large Ukrainian population after the war that's here in New York City. You don't hear about them. You know why? They have the authorization to work. We gave them the financial support that they deserve. We did the right thing for them. We should do the same for those who are coming from South, Central America, and other parts of the globe. That consistency will resolve this issue that we're facing.
Mr. Mayor, I know we only have so much time, and I want to hit and talk about three other topics,
yes.
One being EVs. I want to talk about social media, and frankly, I want to talk about weed in New York City. I want to talk about the EV piece first. You just put out a job creation plan. Part of that includes EV infrastructure. And you're doing, though, that at a time, in truth, when a lot of the major car manufacturers in the U.S. are actually pulling back on some of their EV ambitions.
EVs are here, electric vehicles are here, and they're going to be here. You're going to see a lot of laws shift and change to move away from fossil fuel. They're here. The problem is that if you build it, they will come. And the building is the EV charging stations. And so we have a real win-win here. If we proliferate our cities with the charging stations, number one, you can employ many individuals who know how to install them, to prepare them, to fix them, to manufacture them. It will be a real job growth in the process. Then it's a win for our economy. We know our economy, right. Our economy can take this boost, and our environment, when we were moving in the wrong direction in our environment. Right. I think that EVs are the way to go. We're going to continue to expand faster charging. The technology is getting better and better as we continue to use it more and more.
On social media, you're suing TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube over mental health. The mental health crisis you say is happening in the city and costing this city $100 million. You've sued them now. Partnership for New York says that it's the wrong approach. I'm curious what you think the end result of that suit is supposed to be. Meaning, are you hoping to get dollars from them? Are you hoping to change their behavior? Are you hoping to do both?
I think that all of you who sit around this discussion reflect on your children. You know what's happening at home. You know how addictive these devices and social media platforms they have become to our children. Increase in suicidal ideations, increase in depression. Our young girls no longer believe their body types are really part of their heritage and who they are. We are watching violence being proliferated. Here in New York City, you're seeing young people ride on top of subway trains, getting 35 million views. We're seeing them steal vehicles because they're learning it on social media platforms. It has hijacked our babies. And what I want out of this is for our young people to regain what we all need as we do our personal development. All our neurologists and scientists are talking about less than 14 years old. The brains are not prepared to do this form of intaking of information and some real unfortunate information that our children are receiving. So we want them to improve, remove, and stop using algorithms that is harming our children at such an early age, and to pay for the cost of some of the mental health crisis we're seeing coming out of this. This is the right thing to do, just as we did with cigarette manufacturers years ago.
You mentioned cigarettes. I want to talk about weed for a moment. Just yesterday, you had a ribbon cutting for a legal pot shop that opened up in Thursday, owned by a minority small business owner. I'm curious what you think of weed in the city. It feels to me, as somebody who lives in this city, that every block you walk on, You smell it everywhere. It's everywhere.
Agree.
And I wonder just how you as the mayor feel about that and whether something needs to be done about that.
And I concur with you. We had a law that was passed in Albany. I thought the law had good intentions. We knew for far too long that the heavy-handed approach of dealing with small quantities of marijuana was really criminalizing a large population of people, particularly black and brown communities. But we cannot allow this to get out of control. And what does that look like? We're seeing far too many illegal shops opening. Because the police department, the sheriff, we do not have the local authority to immediately close down these locations. We should make sure that this is a well-regulated, legal shops that are opening. And then we have to be clear about where you can actually smoke, like we did with cigarettes. People thought it was not possible to regulate where you smoke cigarettes, because we can't have our young children starting the day smoking marijuana, sitting inside a classroom and trying to learn. We know what this does to brain development at an early age. And so I'm concerned, but I think if we take the right steps and the right precautions, like we do with any other substance such as alcohol, we can make sure that this does not get out of control.
What does that require the city to do? What does that require the state to do?
Number one, in Albany right now, we have been having conversations with the governor. She introduced it into our budget. We just need local authority to go in, do inspections. Right now, our police department cannot go in and do inspection for marijuana. We need to change that. We need to be able to go after those landlords that intentionally rent or lease their locations to people who are selling illegal marijuana. Give us the authority to do so, and we'll clean this mess up.
But what about the people on the corner of the street just smoking every which way?
The law allows you to do that. We know.
I know that, but that means that the whole city is just going to be overrun with it. That's part of the problem, no?
I feel your pain, but I left Albany many years ago. I'm no longer the state senator. I'm the mayor. You know, New Yorkers that don't want this to take place, they have to share their voices in Albany about open use of marijuana. Right now, it is legal to do so.
Mr. Mayor, we always appreciate having you on the broadcast.
Thank you.
We are always rooting for New York, so thank you.
Take care.
Next on Squawk Pod, Apple's VR headset. It looks a little like an insect. It costs thousands. Some guy wore it at his wedding. Well, Wall Street Journal's personal tech columnist Joanna Stern has been living with the Vision Pro for a month and shares her favorite place to wear it.
You will see more people wearing these on airplanes because it is a great experience up in the air.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nexco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience.
Acura wins Daytona.
And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Nexco, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
You're listening to Squawk Pod. Here's Becky Quick.
Check this out, this photo. This is a groom wearing the Apple Vision Pro at his wedding. Photo went viral. This is software engineer Jacob Wright. He wore the headset during his February 10th wedding in Utah, not during the ceremony itself, but for photos, and while dancing during the reception. His bride, Cambry Wright, told SF Gate that she wasn't mad. She thought it was funny. But you have seen more and more scenes like this. It's been a month since the Vision Pro was made available to the public. Our next guest was one of the very first people to try it out. Joining us right now is Joanna Stern. She's Wall Street Journal personal technology columnist and a CNBC contributor. And Joanna, I was a little surprised by your take at the end of a month. It sounds like, for you at least, the honeymoon has worn off.
It has. And I guess I could have gotten remarried or renewed my vows in it, which would have been the real ultimate stunt. But yeah, I've been using it for now a month. And of course, when you review a product, you're using it all the time when you first get it. You want to evaluate it. And I really enjoyed using the Vision Pro at first, and I still enjoy using it. I am just reaching for it far less. For me, it is definitely not an everyday computer. And the things I thought I would be using it for, which is work, I thought I would be like every day putting this on, using this to get some of my writing done, working done. That's not the case. I'm actually turning to this more to the entertainment purposes, to watch a movie, to watch a show. And I do have to say, I believe the Killer app is actually flying with this on. You will see more people wearing these on airplanes because it is a great experience up in the air.
Yeah, I loved your anecdote from that. Maybe you can talk a little bit about it, because you were seated between a married couple on a flight and you were able to turn it off and basically make it look like you were on the moon.
Yeah, I think, look, even if you have the best seat on an airplane, this thing is going to be great. But if you've got the worst seat on an airplane, which I happen to have had a few weeks ago when on flight, this thing was great. And that really, that speaks to what this is right now, which is really a virtual reality headset. It's great for escaping those situations you may not want to be in, or just taking a break. And so in the case of the airplane, yeah, I was quickly able to log on to United's Wi-Fi, quickly able to then start streaming some videos that I downloaded, even stream some stuff through the United app. So it's a good experience, but that question is, how often are you going to use this? And really, if you think about what's happened with virtual reality and the hurdles they've had to going mainstream, especially those quests, this is a similar situation. People buy them, they're excited, and then they may sit in a drawer or in the corner for the majority of the time. And that is the real hurdle that Apple's up against.
So, Joanna, I'm sure you saw when Mark Zuckerberg effectively did his own review of the Vision Pro. And he effectively made the argument that he thought that his device was better, just on a both on a price adjusted basis. But I think he thought overall on a better with because of the weight and because of these other issues, and thinks that there's a lot of stuff that those devices can do that the Vision Pro can also do, but that he believes they've either marketed badly or otherwise. How do you think about that?
I still think that the MetaQuest is a very strong product for that price point. But when you put on the Vision Pro, it is a markedly better experience in a few different areas. It is definitely heavier, and that battery pack is a pain, which is what he was really pointing out. But some of the quality issues and the way Apple has perfected the hand tracking is, to me, superior. And it is a more natural experience in terms of navigating these digital interfaces. Meta does a very good job in certain areas. And I would say one area I really think Apple's going to have to head into, and it makes natural sense for them, is working out. One of the best things Meta did was acquire Supernatural, which is this workout company, which you work out in VR. And it is the one reason I usually find myself going back to the MetaQuest.
Having said that, though, you're not keeping this Vision Pro. You're sending it back. You don't think it's time for you to buy one?
Look, this was a review unit, and it's gonna time to go back. To me, the big question is, will I miss it? Will I miss having that around? And will that be the reason to buy the $3,500 headset? Look, I may end up buying it just because I should have it here and it's part of my job. But if it was just an everyday consumer, I would not be buying the headset.
Joanna, thank you for joining us. Good to see you.
Good to see you guys.
That is Squawk Pod for today, for the week. It's March 2024 already. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. And to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, please follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
Now we are clear. Thanks, guys.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. X-Go, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. Ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.